January 2, 1967. Somewhere over the Red River Delta, the clouds are building at Phuc Yen, one of North Vietnam's main fighter bases. The MiG-21 pilots are on alert. The fish beds sit ready on the ramp, their Soviet-built airframes pointed at a gray sky. The pilots know the pattern. The Americans come in from Thailand, loaded with bombs, flying predictable altitudes, predictable timing, predictable formations. Ground control intercept controllers will talk the fish beds onto the strike package. The MiGs dive, fire their Atoll heat-seeking missiles, and sprint back to the airfield. They've been doing it for months, it works. What they don't know, what nobody outside a small circle at Ubon Royal Thai Air Force Base in Thailand knows, is that today is different. I'm Tail Dragger, you're listening to The Hangar on Radio Hangar, and the story of what happened over North Vietnam that afternoon is the story of a fighter pilot's mind working at its absolute most dangerous. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo private pilot, instrument rating all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. The story starts with a man named Robin Olds. That name gets dropped in hushed tones around hangar tables. His father was Major General Robert Olds, one of the architects of American strategic air power between the wars. The son was a football star at West Point, good enough that he was seriously considered for a professional career after graduation. He chose otherwise. He graduated in 1943, got his wings, and shipped to England to fly P-38 Lightnings with the 479th Fighter Group. Then he transitioned to P-51 Mustangs, and the Luftwaffe started having a very bad time. By the end of the war in Europe, Robin Olds had 12 aerial victories. He was 22 years old. After VE Day, rather than go home, he flew with the Royal Air Force, the first American to join a frontline RAF squadron after the armistice. He was that kind of pilot, the kind who seeks out the hardest fight because the fight itself is the point. Korea came and went. Olds missed the aerial combat there, and it aided him. He stayed in the Air Force when a lot of his contemporaries got out, flew the early jets, climbed the ranks, learned to navigate the institution. He was now a general officer, but the soul of the man was still the 22-year-old banking hard after a 109 over the Rhine. In 1966, Brigadier General Robin Olds took command of the 8th Tactical Fighter Wing at Ubon Royal Thai Air Force Base in Thailand. The wing flew the McDonnell Douglas F-4 Phantom II, and he arrived to find a war that was going badly in the air. Pull up a chair because you need to understand the tactical situation to appreciate what Olds actually did. The primary American strike aircraft in the air war over North Vietnam was the Republic F-105 Thunderchief. Pilots called it the Thud. It was a big, fast airplane designed in the 1950s to carry a nuclear weapon at supersonic speed from European bases deep into Soviet territory. By 1966, it was flying conventional strike missions deep into North Vietnam, hauling iron bombs at subsonic speeds through some of the heaviest and most sophisticated anti-aircraft defenses in the history of air warfare. The North Vietnamese had learned from the Soviets and from the Chinese. They had surface-to-air missile batteries, the Soviet SA-2 Guideline, radar-guided and lethal. They had thousands of anti-aircraft guns, everything from 23mm autocannons to 85mm heavy guns that could reach 40,000 feet. And they had the MiG-21 fish beds. The MiG-21 was a capable airplane, short-range, point-defense interceptor, very fast in a straight line. Excellent rate of climb, armed with K-13. Atoll air-to-air missiles, which were essentially Soviet reverse-engineered copies of the American AM-9. Sidewinder heatseeker. The irony of being shot at with your own technology was not lost on the American crews. The North Vietnamese MiG pilots had developed a disciplined hunting technique. They orbited at altitude far enough from the strike package that the Americans couldn't engage them under the rules of engagement without visual identification. Their ground control intercept, or GCI controllers, would watch the American strike package build on radar, compute the geometry, and talk the MiGs onto an attack run from above and behind. The fish beds would dive in out of the sun or out of the clouds, fire their missiles at close range, and then use their superior speed to run. Against a heavily laden F-105 committed to a bomb run, this worked beautifully. The Thud was not a dogfighter, it was a supersonic truck, and a magnificent one, but in a turning fight at low speed against a MiG-21, it was at a severe disadvantage. The rules of engagement also handcuffed the Americans in ways that made experienced pilots quietly furious. They couldn't bomb the airfields the MiGs operated from, couldn't attack aircraft sitting on the ramp, had to visually identify a target before firing, which meant closing to a range where you could also get shot. The loss rate was brutal, and the pattern was clear to anyone willing to look at it honestly. Robin Olds looked at it honestly. He saw something that discipline had inadvertently created. The North Vietnamese GCI controllers were very good, but their system depended on recognizing the specific signature of an American strike package. The way the electronic countermeasures, or ECM, pods were spaced across the formation, the call signs on the radio, the ingress altitude, the route from the refueling tracks over Laos into the target area, the timing. The whole attack profile of an F-105 strike package had a specific radar and electronic fingerprint, and the North Vietnamese had learned to read it like a book. What if you gave them exactly the book they expected, until the last possible moment?
Olds and his weapons officers worked out the details over days, quietly, in a planning cell that was kept deliberately small. Operation Bolo F-4 Phantoms, carrying no bombs, armed for air-to-air combat with AIM-7 Sparrow radar-guided missiles and AMI-9 Sidewinders, would fly the exact same ingress routes the F-105 packages used, same altitudes, same timing off the tanker tracks. The ECM pods would be positioned on the Phantom wings in precisely the formation the thuds used. The flights would use call signs that sounded like any other strike day. Olds would lead, and his flight would go by his own name. Then Ford, Rambler, Lincoln, Baxter. Additional flights stacked behind. To the North Vietnamese radar operators and GCI controllers watching their scopes, it would look like a large, slow, vulnerable strike package heading for the Hanoi area. It was actually 28 F-4 Phantoms loaded to the rail with air-to-air weapons, looking for a fight. The plan had to be kept tight. If North Vietnamese signals intelligence picked up any anomaly, any deviation from the expected pattern, the deception collapsed and you'd sent 28 crews into a trap instead of setting one. Only a handful of people at Yuban knew what Bolo actually was. January 2, 1967. The weather over North Vietnam that morning was marginal and deteriorating. Cloud layers above and below the planned engagement altitude broke into overcast. There was real debate about whether to launch. The conditions would complicate formation flying and compress the visual arena where any close-in fight would happen. Olds launched anyway. The Phantoms crossed the Mekong River and turned northeast. Masks on, oxygen hissing cold through the regulators. Two J-79 turbojets burning behind each crew, 16,000 pounds of thrust apiece. The airplane clean of anything that would slow it down or give it away. The radio had the call signs and the chatter of a routine strike day. The formations were tight. The timing off, the tanker was textbook on the North Vietnamese radar screens, the picture looked exactly right. Then, on the radar scopes of the Phantom crews, contacts appeared, high, multiple returns, building fast. The MiG-21s were scrambling off Phu Kien.
The GCI controllers had watched the big strike package come in from the west, computed the intercept geometry they'd worked 100 times before, and talked their fish beds off the runway. Standard intercept of bomb-laden Thunder Chiefs. They had no reason to think otherwise. Everything they'd seen told them. This was exactly what they'd seen before. It was not what they'd seen before. Now here's where it gets interesting. Olds' flight hit the merge first. The MiG-21s came down hard from altitude, nose down, building speed, diving into the strike formation from above and behind exactly as they were trained to do. And then they found out what they'd actually jumped. These weren't thuds. The F-4 Phantom II, whatever its other complications in Vietnam, was a large, powerful, heavily armed machine with two trained crew members and eyes on the radar scope in the back seat. Robin Olds pulled his flight into the merge and the sky became what fighter pilots call a furball, a turning, twisting, three-dimensional knife fight where altitude is traded for position and the weapons envelope is measured in fractions of a second. The fishbeds that got their shots off fired and missed. The geometry they'd planned for wasn't the geometry they had. The Phantoms were maneuvering, not running. The first MiG came apart, then the second, then Ford flight was in the engagement and Rambler, and the radio was alive with the short, hard language of people in close quarters aerial combat. Calls and warnings and position reports, and the controlled urgency of trained crews doing what they'd trained for. In approximately 12 minutes, seven MiG-21s were destroyed, seven. Not a single American aircraft was lost. Olds himself shot down one of the fishbeds, an AME-9, finding its mark in a tight engagement. His contact on the scope became a fireball, and Robin Olds had 16 aerial victories across two wars and two decades of flying fighters. He was 44 years old and had just outflown a generation of pilots half his age over one of the most heavily defended patches of airspace on the planet.
Some MiGs escaped by diving into the clouds and running hard for the deck. Weather that had nearly scrubbed the mission had actually compressed the engagement, pushed everything tighter. Seven kills in 12 minutes is what that compression produced. A few of the later American flights couldn't get into the fight because of the same weather, but it didn't matter. The mission had done what Olds designed it to do. The North Vietnamese Air Force went very quiet after January 2nd. The fishbed inventory had taken a single day loss it couldn't absorb easily.
For weeks, the MiG stayed on the ground or flew only in situations where the GCI controllers were absolutely certain of what they were tracking. The deception had worked so completely that Hanoi had to essentially relearn how to read American tactics before they would risk their fighters again. The strike packages still had to fly, the SAM sites were still shooting, the gun batteries were still loaded. The war continued in all its grinding, expensive, unresolved weight. But for a stretch of time after Operation Bolo, the MiG-21 threat over the north was neutralized, and the Thud crews had one less thing trying to kill them on every ride. Now, let me tell you about the mustache. Robin Olds grew what I can only describe as a magnificent handlebar mustache at Ubon, wide, sweeping, the kind of thing you'd see on a Royal Flying Corps pilot from 1917. It was against Air Force regulations. His superiors said so more than once. His crews loved it. Olds kept it anyway. He wore it as a banner for the Wolfpack, a signal that said this wing has its own identity, its own way of doing things, and we are not going to be interchangeable with anyone else's outfit. There's a photograph of him from that period, flight suit and handlebar mustache, and the look of a man who has decided he's done explaining himself. It tells you everything. When he came home after Bolo and the Air Force put him in front of the press and the cameras and the politicians, he shaved it before he got off the plane at Andrews. He said later it had stopped being his. Once the public owned it, it meant something different, and he wanted no part of that version of it. That's the kind of man he was. His 4 aerial victories in Vietnam, added to 12 from World War II, gave him 16 lifetime. He never got a 5th Vietnam kill, which would have made him an ace in 2 separate wars. He never talked much about that gap in public. What he did say repeatedly was that the pilots of the Wolfpack were the finest group of fighter crews he'd ever had the privilege of leading. After Vietnam, he spent the rest of his active career pushing the Air Force to take aerial combat training seriously. He believed American pilots were going into the merge in Southeast Asia without the foundational dogfighting skills they needed, because 2 decades of missile doctrine and nuclear deterrence theory had convinced the institution that close-range air combat was an obsolete problem. The kill ratios over Vietnam said otherwise, loudly and expensively. The Navy heard the argument. The Navy Fighter Weapons School at Miramar, what the world came to know as Top Gun, opened in 1969. The Air Force followed with dedicated aggressor squadrons and formal weapons school programs. You can draw a straight line from the painful lessons of MiG Alley over North Vietnam to the pilot who outflew his adversary in the next conflict, because somebody in the system listened to what Bolo and the Wolfpack proved at a very high price. Robin Olds retired in 1973 as a brigadier general. He died on May 14, 2007, at Steamboat Springs, Colorado. He was 84 years old. There is a statue of him at the Air Force Academy. His portrait hangs at the Air Force Weapons School at Nellis. And there are pilots flying today who were trained by pilots who were trained by the generation that flew with the Wolfpack, carrying his understanding of the fighter pilot's trade into the cockpit without always knowing exactly where it came from. That's the legacy, not the statue. The lesson passed forward. Most of what I've told you comes from fighter pilot Olds' memoir, written with Christina Olds and Ed Rasmus, worth every page. You can find more stories at radiohanger.com. I'm Taildragger. Fly it like you mean it.